Today on Doomed! My God, how time flies. 1 year ago today, on January 6, 2021, a pro-Trump mob stormed the Capitol building in Washington, D.C. in an attempt to really stop the election results from being certified, which would declare Joe Biden the winner of the 2020 presidential election, in an attempt to basically overturn the election and hand Donald Trump another term of the presidency. And joining me on this very special show, which is it's not technically the first live stream of the year for Doomed, but it is my first guest of the year of 2022 on this show. And joining me, he is a friend of the show. He's been on the show numerous times. He is a resident fellow at DFR Lab, and he is the host of the Shitpost podcast. Let me pull him up on the screen so you could see him and me. I wasn't on the screen either. Jared Holt, ladies and gentlemen. Jared, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks, Matt. It's been quite a year. I can still taste the tear gas in my mouth from when we were about to take the country back, and then the libs got in the way. But needless to say, it's good to be back.
Right, right. I mean, I will say I did initially think, today's January 6th, and I thought to myself, you know, it's obvious what today's show should be about. It should be about the Epiphany, when the three kings finally reach the newborn Jesus Christ, and we should, of course, have Jared Holt on to talk about that. And then it hit me, oh, there's another thing that happened on January 6th. We should probably talk about that instead. And
yeah, I know I am technically a War on Christmas expert. All my notes here are about the reason for the season. But yeah, we can try to talk about what happened today.
It's when the three kings finally arrived at the Capitol building, I think, or am I crossing things together? I don't even know. No, but anyway, Jared, first of all, everyone should know this is while it is a live stream on my channel, this is officially, as we usually do when Jared and I talk, this is an official Doomed / Shitpost collaboration show. It's both shows in one. Jared's gonna join me a little longer than most guests join me on this show to try to get. Basically, we're combining two shows, so it's obvious that we would double the amount of time we talk. This is a show about what happened last year on January 6, 2021. When a bunch of Trump supporters stormed the Capitol building in an attempt to overthrow the election results and reinstate Donald Trump as the president of the United States. And, I was on the Majority Report earlier today, and we talked about a lot of things about January 6th. And I feel like we're going to talk about even more here, obviously. But first, let's get to this, because you have a piece out that basically puts together all this research about basically what's been going on in the pro-Trump world since January 6, 2021, in the past 365 days. A lot of things have changed. A lot of things have sadly stayed the same or got even worse.
Yeah. It's a 40-plus page report that we ran. It came out on Tuesday. Still a perfectly good read today. It's called After the Insurrection, and it takes a look at domestic extremist movements, particularly those that were involved in the lead-up and actual events of January 6th. And kind of, I gave my best shot at, kind of doing an accounting of what I saw those movements do over the last year and kind of where we stand today and, some takeaways from that. There's a seemingly like a million moving pieces in this report. It goes into a lot of detail, It could have been even longer, but at some point, as a writer, you would just have to stop writing and, pass it to the editors.
Sounds like sounds like a possible book for any people in the publishing world listening to this show right now.
I don't know.
trying to hook you up here, but maybe something else. I don't know. Go ahead.
Anyway, that's at AtlanticCouncil.org. You can check out that report. And I hope that it's useful to people. The reason I wrote this report is because I've been doing this not a long time, 6 or 7 years, this kind of work, looking at this kind of stuff. And a frustration I've had over the years is whenever a major sort of flashpoint happens in this space, whether it is Unite the Right in Charlottesville in 2017, the El Paso shooting, the Christchurch shooting, Pittsburgh synagogue shooting, the Capitol riot, whenever there's a big, violent, graphic outburst from these movements, a lot of the conversation when it comes to what to do about it kind of circles back around, that given point in time. And while going back in time and establishing the facts, doing investigations and et cetera are all incredibly crucial, it's important as far as coming up with solutions goes to understand extremism in this country is a moving thing. It's a fluid, and whatever container it's in, however conditions in the country change, it matches it. And because of that, a periodic sort of reaccounting of how we're thinking about this or what we're doing about this is necessary if we're going to be successful.
Right. Now, let's sort of hone in, I guess, on specifics, specific groups, specific people. Since last year, there's been a number of arrests. Do you remember off the top of your head how many people have actually been charged so far in the if you don't know the exact number, I'm pretty sure
I want to say it's the low 700s.
Right. It's been a lot of people. And there's been a lot of conversation about, basically who's been arrested and the people who have had their day in court, the punishment and whether it fits the crime. And, in my opinion, there's been some people who have gotten a lackadaisical type of punishment in terms of how involved they were. For example, President Donald Trump, former President Donald Trump, nothing has happened to him. No responsibilities have been put on him for basically calling for the whole thing. And then you have, basically what I like to say, call dupes, people who don't even really understand what they were doing down there, didn't even know what building they were even in front of or in, getting years and years in prison. And I'm not saying feel bad for them. I'm just saying it's kind of messed up where someone like that has years in prison and someone like an Ali Alexander who helped put the event together is walking around free.
Yeah, it can definitely be frustrating. The DOJ is still investigating and exploring the avenues there. There's also some civil litigation that's been brought against Trump and other people in the orbit. But I think that's a pretty widely shared frustration and perfectly valid too. The Kramer twins, Ali Alexander, Alex Jones, etc. They've gotten subpoenaed, but as far as actual consequences go, like, they were the ones who kind of set the ball in motion, and not to be too disparaging, but the dum-dums that, got caught up, that fell for their bullshit and went out and acted on it, are suffering all the consequences so far.
Right.
Whether that changes in the future as these investigations go forward remains to be seen. I always have a healthy amount of skepticism there. To date, it can be a little bit frustrating to see sort of exactly how that's played out so far.
Right. I mean, it's to me, it's clear that, when someone like the QAnon shaman, who basically became the face of, you know, the whole January 6th events at the Capitol because of his, basically because of what he, his attire, his costume. You know, he clearly has problems, issues, and he gets like 41 months. Now, I'm not saying he should get away scot-free or whatever, and there should be no consequences for him. I'm not, but it is a real, you know, messed up situation where someone like that is, you know, facing like the longest jail sentence so far. Yet, even like if we look below the leaders who helped organize the thing, but have maintained like a distance by saying like they didn't go inside the Capitol or whatever. Like, you know, we had like militia guys and Proud Boys who clearly were organized in some way and had some sort of idea what they were doing, and they don't seem to really have paid any consequences either yet.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, some of them have. There have been some Proud Boys that have faced charges. I know the InfoWars guy, what's his name? Owen Schroyer. Like, he got charged with a pretty minor thing. It was, like, trespassing. But, you know, a lot of this stuff is still hung up in the courts. The court process system goes really slow. But I think it's kind of a good kind of case example of the fact that, you know, just leaving this to law enforcement and the courts on its own isn't going to really change the landscape. You know, individuals might face consequences for actions they did, and they'll get, you know, their day in court, right? But as far as the broader problems that are producing this kind of thing, that you can't really like go to court and get your way out of it all the way. You can use the courts to try to prevent some of these harms from metastasizing to begin with, but ultimately what the issue here is social disorder and a capitalization on social disorder to produce an anti-democratic push against our country.
Right. Now, you know, I feel like one of the things that especially has been prevalent today on the year anniversary of what happened there, it's people seem to have like a distorted view. I hate when people do this because there's no both sides to this. Like, and we'll get to a clip that shows how ridiculous that whole thing is. But at the same time, I feel like there is a tendency on, more mainstream sort of reporters and, talking heads on TV to sort of overplay what happened. And then there's a tendency on the internet with the right and even some leftists to downplay what happened. And no one really tries to set obviously people like you do a great job of doing this, but no one really tries to in those groups present it as it's supposed to be in terms of like it was a serious event, but it wasn't as like the Lincoln Project tries to portray it as like 9/11 part two. Like, I feel like there's a way to like really like understand the situation and understand what happened, but also not like over dramatize how even like some of those so serious events, like there's a tendency to like overdo it even. It's like, you know, as someone who works in this field, I think, you know, it'd be interesting to hear what you have to say about that.
Yeah, and I don't want to downplay the severity of what happened. What happened was, I mean, it's going to be in history books,
of course,
right? forever. We sat and watched something really horrific, and should definitely be doing what we can to make sure that that kind of thing doesn't happen again. But the comparisons to Pearl Harbor, to 9/11, these comparisons, what worries me the most about them is that they're going to prompt kind of a war on terror redux. 9/11, same ordeal, horrific tragedy, heartbreaking event that happened in the U.S. But what came out of it was a huge uptick in surveillance targeting Muslim communities, targeting regular Americans. The NSA showed up and became a thing. The Patriot Act passed, and all these surveillance powers opened up. And, you know, I guess my immediate concern with those kind of comparisons is that it's going to invoke the same kind of mindset among people that caused us to make those mistakes, which I should also say, as far as the war on terror goes, there's not a whole lot of really rock solid evidence that these drastic measures dramatically improved the safety of the U.S. or you know, whatever.
Right. Like, in my opinion, like, it feels like, you know, obviously, like, it's, you know, I completely agree with what you said about how the idea of looking at it in that way is going to bring up the whole surveillance state this country has basically lived in the aftermath of 9/11. But also, I think, you know, I think the event of January 6th is, you know, a stark sort of visual for people, but unlike the terrorist acts that I previously mentioned, the real thing here wasn't really January 6th. It's like it just like emboldened the continued attacks on the election process, and we've seen since January 6th, basically, I feel like, you know, Republicans in various state houses across the country sort of emboldened by this idea that if, like, wow, if you know, people involved in January 6th basically, like, wow, we as a Republican Party basically got away with supporting that whole ordeal, and that was, like, visually, like, stunning and insane. Why aren't we, and we got away with it, why aren't we just, like, encoding in our laws things to make it more difficult for us to lose elections? And they're going ahead and doing that now. And
it's like, what if we did the paperwork version of this?
Which is actually the bigger problem, in my opinion. Like, that's...
And it's something that's been going on for decades. I mean, there's whole legal institutions and shops in the conservative apparatus that have for years and years tried to advance voting laws to make it harder for non-white people to vote. And they do it under these terms of vote integrity and that sort of stuff. But, like, that has been going on for a long, long time. And generally, I think January 6th, I think what makes it so severe is it was a violent outburst of what these sort of broader undercurrents leading various conservative factions for a long time, that, you know, people have been kind of just afraid to call it what it is. And I think what made January 6th so alarming to me was it was kind of crystal clear, violent evidence that what we're seeing happen is a social movement. Ultimately, it's a populist social movement. And, you know, it can be easy to think of this stuff as existing on, like, gab.com or whatever, but, like, these sentiments are not just held by, like, the absolute weirdos of society. They have gotten pickup and have been, you know, almost, you know, seemingly intentionally injected into the mainstream.
Right.
Whereas even just, you know, two decades ago, people would get embarrassed by that.
I don't even think you had to go back two decades ago, honestly. I mean, we could go much sooner. I think there was a big change in everything. You know, we could go back to, I would say as soon as really 2020. The pandemic really spread this shit much further than I think anyone was ready for it to go that quickly. But, you know, another thing I think is important to bring up is, like, you know, a lot of people, sort of have a weird notion, I guess, of who actually was involved in January 6th, where we sort of the right likes to push, or even honestly, people, you know, Dems sort of think of, like, these, like, I don't know, blue collar Trump supporters invading the Capitol. But we know from the people who've been arrested and charged is that the vast majority of these people, yes, while there were some like working class blue collar right wingers in the crowd, this was like an uprising of like the small business class.
This was suburban white America.
Like people who make like six figures to like low millions.
There were stories about like, where was she from? Like Southern California. I think there was this woman. I think she was from Southern California who flew a private jet to D.C. to go participate in the insurrection. Right. Like and there certainly were, you know, the working class, grunt of the people or whatever. But overwhelmingly, that was not the case. Many of these people were well off to do. And I think it's like a good case in point that this whole like quote unquote economic anxiety line that we heard all through the Trump years is like kind of just bullshit.
Right. Right. And you know, personally, like, and, you know, a lot of people like to talk about what actually like the physical violence and what actually went down at the Capitol. And to me, like, that's not the problem. Like, honestly, and this is my opinion here, if this was a completely different event, if this was an event fighting for, like, if this was an uprising of the poor and impoverished and working class people fighting for, you know, in the middle of a pandemic, fighting for healthcare or out of poverty wages, fighting for real help from their government, and this is how that manifested, I would have had no problem with it. What the problem was here was that these were people fighting to overturn a legitimate election, the results of a legitimate election, all for a president who legitimately lost because they liked that the administration was against and made life harder for minority groups, immigrants, really they're anyone who they view as their enemies, which is people on, I guess, the left of center, everyone there, anyone who isn't a fervent Trump supporter or a Republican. And I mean, to me, that was the problem. The overturning of the election, the attempt to overturn the election results to inflict more pain on those who already suffer enough in this country. Wasn't really the physicality of it, because if it was for a completely different motive, if it was for a completely different thing, if it was for something righteous, I would have been supportive of that uprising, to be quite frank.
Yeah, I don't know if I would go there. I and we might just have different opinion on that, and that's fine. But yeah, I think sort of the other part of what you said rings true, which is that it wasn't like this was a real struggle. What they were going in and surrounding the Capitol and busting into the Capitol about was the certification of electoral college votes, which is normally a totally benign process that like is maybe on TV, maybe not. It's generally not a big deal. The votes are cast, people kind of accept the winner, but it was attacking like basically an administrative process of democracy and like sort of the last step along the way before everything is done and done. And the, not the literal paperwork, but the rhetorical paperwork and process is done of setting up the next transition. And I think that is what rattled people so much.
Right. Now let's talk about, and you discuss her in your research, because she is, honestly, it surprised me how it didn't have the wings I thought it would have. But there's definitely sections of Trump world that do have turned her into a martyr, and that's Ashley Babbitt. She is the Trump supporter who was shot and killed by a Capitol police officer when she broke through a window inside the Capitol trying to breach the area where I believe it was like the House floor where people House members were basically being held by other Capitol police officers. And they've turned her into some sort of Again, I really thought this would take off a lot more, especially Trump has tried to do it as well, where they turn her into some sort of martyr. And what have you seen about that? Has that taken off? And what is the feeling like? Has it been successful in fundraising or furthering their beliefs with the sections of Trump world that have taken her on as a martyr?
A portion. I'm with you. I'm surprised it didn't go totally mainstream, despite Trump getting in on it, Tucker Carlson getting in on it. But a certain portion of Republican elected officials have gotten in on it. I'm thinking like Marjorie Taylor Greene, Lauren Boebert, Paul Gosar. It's a familiar cast of figures to people who follow the far right, because those guys are just like constantly extending their arms out and yanking things from like the recesses of the far right into the spotlights that inherently come with their positions as elected officials. And as far as like kind of where that spread, the far right definitely got in on it, especially early on. There were like graphics and symbols made, and you know, they were declaring that Ashley Babbitt was, you know, the first slain soldier in the new revolution. And then the cops started arresting people, and they were like doing the Spider-Man meme of like, are you the FBI? Are you the FBI? And, like, pointing at each other. But where we see this nowadays mostly is paired up with this kind of bullshit political prisoner narrative that some have started to, you know, try to advance on the right. Saying that the people who are detained in prison for their roles or under charges lobbed against them, alleging roles in the January 6th attack, usually where you'll see the Ashley Babbitt stuff is kind of paired up with that. And all of that carries the subtext that is sometimes said, sometimes not explicitly said, that what happened on January 6th, like what people were doing, that there wasn't actually anything wrong with it. And I think that's kind of the important takeaway to take from there. To view Ashley Babbitt as a martyr, you have to think that she was doing something heroic by trying to bust through the doors of the chambers there. And I'm kind of surprised that it didn't take off more. It really, what took off more than that, were the conspiracy theories alleging that the FBI staged January 6th entirely.
Right. Let's get to that in a second. I just want to finish with this Ashley Babbitt section. What's interesting to me, it's really not interesting in a sense that we've come to expect it from the right. But it's like, I actually agree with the idea that I think her, I don't think she's a martyr because she's not heroic and didn't do anything righteous, or she was doing something really stupid. I don't think she what happened to her is all around unfortunate. I don't think she deserved to die or get shot or anything like that, but that's because that's my typical belief, that the police should always try to do something they should always try to do something non-lethal before, and that anything like shooting someone should be a last-ditch thing, and I know that's what they argued, but I don't agree with that from what we've seen. But at the same sense, like, we've seen the right say that, you know, for example, unarmed black and brown men who get shot by police in all different, we could literally probably name 100 different scenarios where they have come out and said, like, that person should have been doing what they were doing. It's their fault. Doesn't matter if they were unarmed. Doesn't matter if the cop was in no danger. The cop doesn't know that. They've always laid the blame at the victim. When they're a liberal or progressive or leftist or a black or brown person. But here, Ashley Babbitt, like you've laid out to some portions of the Trump world, she's a martyr. And what happened to her was a crime. And that police officer should, for the first time ever, the right wants to hold the police officer accountable, apparently, is right here when someone's breaking through the window of the Capitol building to try to get to a bunch of congresspeople.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think it's unfortunate that she died. I think it's unfortunate that the police, that anybody died that day.
Right.
It sucks. It really sucks. But yeah, there is quite a bit of dissonance there. And I think for that dissonance to make sense, you have to understand that the worldview, it's like what the right thinks the job of police is. And to view Ashley as a martyr, you have to kind of have in your head that like the police's job is to like brutalize non-white people because that's quote unquote keeping things safe. And then like when they shot Ashley Babbitt, that was, you know, friendly fire. And it certainly didn't help that the police officer who came out as being the one who pulled the trigger was a black man too. You know, that definitely poured some gasoline on that fire.
Right. And I think they were honestly, and you hear this in the crowd, multiple different videos I've seen where the Trump groups that went there that day at the Capitol, to the Capitol, and broke in, there are people who are vocally shocked. Like, they are audibly shocked at the fact that the police didn't lay down their guns and join them in the mob. Like, absolutely shocked that we're the Blue Lives Matter people and you're not joining us to save your president, the one that supports you guys. Like, it does seem like they were, and we've seen that there actually were cops in the as part of the Capitol Police that did actually let them in and sort of join in with them and cheer them on at the very least. But I think they were shocked that they were met with force, people stopping them from trying to enter.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. And, you know, we've seen through, you know, like especially data leaks and like the Oath Keepers hack from earlier this year. Like, it's not just a Capitol Police thing. You know, the police forces across the country tend to be kind of a bit more sympathetic towards far right groups, and some police officers even joined them, which is its own threat and mess entirely. You know, because especially if you're of the school of thought that law enforcement is the solution to rising, you know, far right extremism, then the fact that some law enforcement are, you know, on the membership rolls of some of these organizations, it ends up, you know, faulting the whole process.
Right, right. So let's get to what you brought up just a few minutes ago, where their new thing, it's not really new, but the thing they're really going with is that this event, and my favorite, I think my favorite basically like sequential tweets that are out there from Kevin Sorbo, I think I even like screenshotted them a year ago. It's like, as the Capitol riots are going down that day last year, people like Kevin Sorbo, the actor who played Hercules on the TV show, are tweeting like, yes, the Patriots are storming the Capitol. Yes, the Patriots have made it inside the Capitol. Yes, the Patriots are fighting for Donald Trump. And then the last tweet, once these people sort of see what the broader public perception of this is and not what their little bubble view is of this, suddenly he tweets, and I think it was the last time he tweeted about it, was Antifa dressed up like Trump supporters and stormed the Capitol building and committed all the violence. It was stunning to see that day, but now we are now a year out of it, and I guess they realize that the Antifa thing has very little legs, being that you've got actual, like, people with histories of supporting Trump out there saying like, oh no, I was actually, that was me down there. I was fighting for Trump. I thought that's what we were supposed to do. Now their thing is, this was all an FBI orchestrated event. And sure, there were some like Trump supporters down there, but they were duped by the FBI to go down there.
Yeah. And like, central to these conspiracy theories is conflating FBI agent and FBI informant. And there's still to this day, you know, unanswered questions about what the FBI knew and when, and, you know, where that chain of communication broke down, or, you know, that sort of thing. But this conflation between a FBI informant and an FBI agent is pretty crucial to understanding, like, how these narratives are so bullshit. But first, I'll just lay out the narrative here. The narrative is that, you know, we can see from charging documents for people who are, you know, went to jail or are now in jail for January 6th, these unnamed CIs, which is legal terminology for confidential informant. This would appear in charging documents to indicate a law enforcement source that's not being named in the charging documents to protect the integrity of that source for future investigations or other investigations. Sometimes in these documents, you will also see person one, person two. These could be other people involved in the crime that have not been charged yet. And once those people are charged in future legal documents, the name would be inserted in place of person one, person two. But again, those are included to protect the integrity of other investigations, particularly if they believe the person that they're looking into or seeking charge could be a flight risk. So that out of the way, like, they've been using those terminologies to say, look, the FBI was involved. Look, the FBI was involved. And then taking clips of people who seem to have, like, kind of weird histories or, like, were filmed saying, we have to go into the Capitol. There's this guy named Ray Epps that they're really into. And, you know, using this to concoct this big sort of, well, we're just asking questions about this, and why can't they answer this question type of narrative, alleging that the FBI essentially encouraged Trump supporters to do the insurrection. So why this is bullshit is an FBI informant is just somebody that informs the FBI. It's just like it says, you know, members of hate groups can be FBI informants. It doesn't mean that they work for the FBI. It means that they provide information to them. Or if the FBI calls, they answer that call, right? Sometimes they are paid, sometimes they are not. And the fact that, like, an FBI informant was on the ground wouldn't be, like, the most mind-blowing thing in the whole world, particularly since militia groups and neo-Nazi groups were there. You know, these are groups that are, you know, dug into a little bit more aggressively by agencies like the FBI. So, you know, the whole house of cards kind of buckles, if not completely falls down in many of these cases, when you understand that FBI informant, it does not mean, like, on FBI payroll. They don't take direction from the FBI. They just are a place where the FBI can solicit information about groups or organizations that they're interested in.
Usually in exchange for, like, a lesser sentence for what they're being charged with or something, right? Wouldn't that be the case?
Yeah. I mean, the classic thing they do is they're like, listen, we know you have illegal guns. Here's the charging documents. If you want us to file these in the court, we can do it. And if not, you can just tell us everything you know about this group and, you know, answer our calls once every 3 months.
So basically, if someone went down to the Capitol as a Trump supporter that day and then offered up information that the FBI wanted and only they had, they could be legit Trump supporters who went down to that Capitol building to overturn the election results for Trump, but then realize the consequences after and say, hey, I'll give you this in exchange for a lesser sentence in terms of whatever I'm in trouble with for actually being a real Trump supporter who went down there to overturn the election results.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's a possibility too. You know, I mean, they could have become informants after the fact too. Or it could just be, you know, somebody in the militia movement where the FBI was like, hey, how many militia people are coming from your region? Oh, I think it's a few dozen.
Right.
Okay. You know, and, like,
because
each informant will have its own relationship to the FBI,
right? Because I know that, but I'm thinking of that clip that you, that guy you spoke about, Ray Epps, I believe you said his name is. He's the one, that video that went viral, where, like, he's that, if I'm making sure he's the right guy, I'm asking you now. He's like the tall guy who was present at, like, the January 5th fringe, like, event that happened the night before where they basically were like, oh, we don't want like Roger Stone and Alex Jones speaking on the same stage as Trump. So we'll hold like the fringe Trump supporter event the night before. And there's that video of him saying like Ray Epps, a Trump supporter, went down there saying, and tomorrow we're going to storm the Capitol. We're going to go down there. And they're using that video of that guy to basically say, oh, look, he said this the night before, as if they're trying to like present the idea that nobody who went there had any idea to storm the Capitol prior to this guy telling them that the night before. Like, this wasn't an event planned for months in advance. This guy basically forced them all to storm the Capitol by saying that to like the 12 people he was surrounded by on the night of January 5th in that video.
Yeah, or you can go, you know, check out like the piece that DFR Lab ran in Just Security. I think that was in February, like a month or so after the Capitol attack, where we just lay out that people have been talking about that shit for weeks online. Like, there was an appetite to do this, especially after it started going around that Mike Pence was not down with with Q's master plan to overturn the election by using his vice presidential powers to gunk it up. This is something people were up to, like something I remember seeing on one of the pro-Trump forum boards I was looking at the time as I was trying to kind of size up what I thought might be coming down the barrel, was this group of people talking back and forth about like trying to call a library in the area of the Capitol. It's the Shakespeare Library over there, because they believed a Capitol access tunnel was near the library. And they wanted to essentially send the I guess their version of like the school shooter being like, hey, you're cool, don't come to school tomorrow. You know, they wanted to reach out and essentially be like, we don't hate Shakespeare. We just hate the government and want to overthrow the government. And I don't know if they actually did that or not, but like that's where their head was at. And on these forum boards, there's like a voting system, right? Upvotes and downvotes, like Reddit. And these comments had like hundreds of upvotes on them too. So like other people were seeing that and, you know, sitting back at the keyboard and being like, all right, hell yeah, brother. You know, and I don't know, man, it's stupid. You know, there's plenty of legitimate questions to ask about like the FBI's behavior around that day. But I think there's just nothing. Like, once you understand this legal lingo, you realize that it's just like a big puff of smoke and that there's really nothing to suggest that the FBI like did this, you know, like I don't know. But this has been enabled by the Marjorie Taylor Greens, Paul Gosars, Matt Gaetzes of the world. I mean, just today, I think Matt Gaetzes was like, maybe this was a Fedsurrection.
Right.
Which would be a great name for a movie, but unfortunately I just don't think it's, I think it would have to be a fictional work.
Right. Fed's erection. Speaking of people who went out there today to spin the events of January 6th, I pulled this clip because I thought it was, you know, there's an opening line here that's just amazing. I want to play it for you. You'll be able to hear it. Jared, this is Ron DeSantis, the Florida governor, making a rare appearance because he's been really not seen very much since the holidays. No one knows where he's disappeared to. The rumor is perhaps a COVID positive result for him or his family. I'm not going to speculate, but he hasn't been out there. But he was out there today. And he was asked about January 6th, and this is what he had to say. I know you haven't seen this clip, Jared, but there's something he says in the very beginning. I think it's like the second sentence in that I find hilarious. See if you I'll pause it right after, but see if you notice what he says here.
All right. Yeah, I've been doing shit all day. Been doing stuff all day, so I haven't seen this at all.
All right, here we go.
That if this is what you said it was, why are you not charging people? So I think it's going to end up being just a politicized Charlie Foxtrot today. I don't expect anything good to come out of anything that Pelosi and the gang are doing.
For me, I don't know if you noticed, but he said that he's not down with the politicization. It's going to be a politicized event today. And I just think that's so funny to describe this event like that in terms of you being shocked it's going to be politicized. Like,
geez, man, like they busted in the Capitol. They went gangbusters and they, you know, killed a few people and a couple of our people died. And they were just trying to stop the Electoral College certification process so that Trump Emperor Supreme could be installed by Q. Yeah, so disgusting to politicize that. I'm sorry, Matt. I'm with Ron here. This is fucked up.
Right. It's amazing to me. I heard that and I was like, are you kidding me? Like it's bad enough when people try to act like, oh, you know, a hurricane or something. Don't politicize it. When even those events, an event of like nature, even those events, the aftermath, how the country reacts to it is a political thing based upon what our politicians, usually from a certain party, decide to do to make that sort of those relief efforts as hard as possible. Even those things are politicized, inherently politicized. But then to just so like to take something that is like a political event at its core, the attempt to overturn the election results for a Republican president and whine that the other side is politicizing it is just so fucking hilarious to me. Like, are you kidding me?
Man, on that note, I cannot believe the Republicans trying to politicize the Build Back Better bill before the House. Congressional voting process political, disgusting.
It's amazing to me, and I don't mean.
Is this it's what I always say, man? There's too much politics in Congress.
Right, it's time to take the politics out of Congress. Enough. I don't even remember if he says anything else because that line always just. I'm thinking about it all day. So let me play a little bit more. Just to see, I think there might be one more thing he says here.
Don't expect anything from the corporate press to be enlightening. I think it's going to be nauseating, quite frankly, and I'm not going to do it. But I do think that if you have this January 6th committee, why do we not know some of the people who we know were really involved in orchestrating this? They got pulled off the most wanted list. Christopher Wray was asked at the under oath what FBI was involved in that, and he would not answer the question. And so I think.
So here's the governor of Florida, who, other than Trump, is like the next to Trump, he's like the second favorite to be the next Republican presidential candidate. Here's that guy spreading the exact conspiracy theory disinformation that we just debunked about the FBI involvement. And, you know, he's thinking about that video of Ray Epps because that's the big one that they love using. Right. That might even be the guy who he's talking about who got pulled off. Do you know who he's talking about?
That video is in the congressional record.
Right.
and there's this real POS named Darren Beatty who was fired from the White House resigned from the White House after CNN reported he spoke at a white nationalist conference before he joined the White House. And this was like 2017. But he's got this project now called Revolver News that's like been at the forefront banging this drumbeat of being like, the Oath Keepers are a Fed operation. Oh, look at this guy. He's a Fed too. And like to have. Like, this is Alex Jones level stuff. And to have that coming out of like the governor of Florida, if something were to happen to Trump, like this would be the guy that they run. Might even be like a VP pick contender for Trump 2024. I mean, it's like, I don't know. But like, how can you look at that and not think that our country is in kind of a dangerous place, right?
All right. I mean, let's talk about now where What happened in the aftermath of January 6th last year when it comes to how the right has organized online, because their social media world has completely been shaken up. A lot of major right-wing personalities involved with January 6th, including the president, the former president, Donald Trump himself, have been banned and deplatformed from all sorts of, you know, Facebook, Twitter. YouTube. Where have they sort of all flocked? Because it seems like there's a new social, a right-wing social media platform popping up every, I don't know, a couple months with, and still the big one, Donald Trump's very own social media platform has yet to even make its mark. It's yet to officially launch. So we're all waiting to see what happens there. But where have they sort of all gone? I know there's a few big ones, but what have you seen?
Yeah, you know, and the push to alternative platforms kind of pre-existed in the far right. But what we saw was that this kind of desire to go to these alternative platforms spread even more aggressively after January 6th to the quote-unquote like normies of the Trump movement. And so after January 6th, you know, far-right groups, individuals, figures that were, you know, had their profiles raised by that event, you know, got this sweeping sort of crackdown on social media. And it was really fast, really aggressive, and super disorienting for a lot of these groups. Then you had Parler, which was fairly popular at the time. Amazon Web Services pulled the plug on that. They were down for a period of time. A big bunch of data dropped out of Gap. So what it kind of produced was this game, at least for a moment, of musical chairs, where these groups were going from platform to platform to platform, these larger communities following them, and kind of just stress testing it. Some of these platforms, like Gab and later Parler when it came back online, were chosen because they're part of an ideological project. You know, these are put up by people who themselves have right-wing views. Like in Parler's case, it gets funding from Rebecca Mercer, gazillionaire family in the U.S., very interested in far-right politics, who funded the likes of Milo Yiannopoulos, etc.
But I thought you were going to say Miley Cyrus for a second. I was like, what?
Oh, yeah. And some were seemingly chose out of convenience. Like MeWe, for example, was one that some militia groups were using that I was keeping an eye on. But there's really nothing about MeWe that's like, hey, militia groups, come on in. You know, it was just kind of the feature set was pretty similar to Facebook groups, and the content moderation, as we would find out, was pretty lacking. At the time that they were going to it. MeWe's, I should say, has gotten a bit better about policing those groups, but they haven't nailed it completely. Yeah, so there's this kind of great scattering, a big dispersion, and I think that was probably a big reason why we didn't see like a major follow-up event after January 6th. There was definitely some early appetite for it. But the networking that they had on big platforms like Facebook, Twitter, etc., like key figures were taken out of the mix, big group pages were coming down, and that sort of dissolved the integrity of kind of what they had going at the time. So, you know, after this great scattering, after a few months, they start to come back together, mostly to like a handful of these platforms. A lot of these platforms just couldn't handle a large influx of new users without glitching out, or like the Nazis would show up inevitably and they'd face the moderation problem of like, what do you do when the Nazis show up? Because they always show up at some point. They'd get banned and then they'd go, oh, this place sucks. And then they'd leave and go to a new place. But I would say the winners here have been like Gab and Telegram. Rumble has a shit ton of content on it now. Parler to some degree, you know, and Getter seems to be doing okay, but I think whenever this new Trump platform shows up, Truth Social, I think it's gonna kind of shake up the whole landscape again. And I think, you know, the effect that has is going to depend on what level of moderation, content moderation, is taking place on Truth Social. I would imagine it's probably not going to be as loose as the Trump audience really wants, but also it's King Emperor Trump. You know, this is daddy's platform. So there'll probably be a ton of people on it regardless.
Right. Right. I do think, you know, Getter is having its moment right now, even though, you know, they came to the scene late. They came months after I think it was almost half, you know, 6 months later they launched after the January 6th events. But they seem to be going through a little traffic bump right now due to Joe Rogan suddenly deciding this is going to be where he sets up shop for on an alternative platform. He recently joined Getter.
Getter.
Yeah, I haven't heard much about Parler, honestly. It seems like they might have fallen to the wayside a bit. I haven't heard much. Mostly, I think Rumble is probably the one platform that's currently out that's safe, because they have, in terms of safe from like the getting steamrolled by Trump's network, because they seem to be serving a different niche. The others
and Rumble also has a deal with Trump's network too.
There you go.
I think I remember reading that they're going to do video content delivery on that service. And Trump has streamed some of his rallies on Rumble.
Right.
So
let me be clear.
So, yeah, they're in the clear.
Let me be clear, too, when I say it serves a different niche. I mean, like, the other platforms are all just trying to be like Twitter or Facebook copycats, whereas Rumble is the only video platform that has sprung up as an alternative solution for the right wingers. I guess they don't really want to go to BitChute because – BitChute's even...
It sucks.
Also, it's probably somehow even more anti-Semitic than Gab.
Yeah, BitChute is tough, man. That is a grimy place. And it's all the video is done by like peer-to-peer sharing. So you click play on a video and then you just have to like sit there. It's like using dial-up on a video service again.
Right. Let's talk about now, I wanted to play these clips. I didn't want to forget. So, Media Matters put together this compilation, which is pretty interesting. It's it sort of hits on what I brought up before about, there are some people out there who, feel like they need to over dramatize the already serious events that happened on January 6th. And Fox News is making fun of, I guess someone compared it to Pearl Harbor, which again, it's not something I think that's not the apt comparison. And Media Matters put together this compilation of Fox News focusing on this. And then there is a clip from just last month where Fox News basically shows what is an okay comparison to Pearl Harbor. Let's watch this compilation. It's funny.
Yeah, this should be good.
Vice President Harris compared the Capitol riot to Pearl Harbor.
Okay, so it was Kamala Harris.
Whoa, Harris did that?
I didn't know she did. If she did, I think she is wrong.
I wouldn't go there. But. Yeah,
but let me rewind and let's listen to this.
Vice President Harris compared the Capitol riot to Pearl Harbor.
Really equated this with the attack on Pearl Harbor.
The comparisons to Pearl Harbor and 9/11 are just farcical.
Yes, the vice president actually compared the Capitol riot, which sadly resulted in 5 deaths. Pearl Harbor, 2,403.
Now, let's play this clip from just last month that was on Fox News. And see what is an apt comparison in their view to Pearl Harbor. Again, I agree that Pearl Harbor and January 6th at the Capitol, not equatable. But let's see what they think is.
Reverend Jacques Dugraff.
Somebody asked me, why are you here? I'm here because these colors don't run.
To be clear,
is this from the Fox Christmas tree thing?
To be clear, yes. If you're listening to the podcast and not seeing the visual here, this is from the Fox News relighting of the Fox News Christmas tree. If you'll recall, homeless individual set the original tree on fire in early December, and Fox News tried to parlay a story about a sadly disturbed man who did something that he probably was even unaware he was doing. We probably had no idea it was the Fox News Christmas tree. They tried to turn that into a liberal war on Christmas story. And this is from the relighting of the, I guess the lighting of the replacement tree would be the more apt description. Here is from that event on Fox News just last month.
80 years ago this week, they tried to extinguish the darkness at a place called Pearl Harbor. We didn't fold then, and we won't fold now because we've come this far by faith. In our tradition, we say, this little light of mine.
Oh, my God. You know, it's...
Oh, my God. Do you see the woman in the green behind him with the Christmas light necklace?
Yeah.
Here, rewind that just a little bit. I want everyone to watch her face. Her name's Janice, I think, Dean? Janice? She's the weather person for Fox.
All right, let's... Oh, is she the one who... is I think she's even retweeted me a few times because she is very anti Andrew Cuomo, which I'm on board with there.
Like what she said about the nursing home stuff, like actually ended up being right too.
Yeah,
like for the most part.
Yeah, so I missed this. Let's see. Let me watch her throughout.
Don't run. 80 years ago this week, they tried to extinguish the darkness at a place called Pearl Harbor. We didn't fold then, and we won't fold now because
so
we've come this far. By faith.
She's definitely holding back some laughter there. I think you're right. There's something going on there. I mean, listen, we know for a fact that there are normal people who are working at Fox News who see the bullshit and don't care as long as they get a paycheck to spew bullshit of their own. I'm not saying that's necessarily her. But for example, take a look at all of the Fox News hosts working remotely this week because of the uptick in COVID in New York City, while at the same time yelling at teachers in Chicago, for example, for not going to school on Wednesday to work because they were doing like the union was doing like an pro-remote day because of the uptick in COVID cases there. And they were like, you should go to school, as they were literally beaming in from their own living rooms because Fox News told them that they were working remote this week.
Right, right, exactly.
It's like, you know, it's incredible that and you know, they've basically on Fox News continuously downplay the idea that there were individuals and organizations involved last year on January 6th who did have the actual mindset to do what they said they were going to do and try to overturn the election results. It wasn't just, you know, like we mentioned before, I called them the dupes, you called them the dum-dums, the people who went down there because Trump said to come on down, and then we saw them like bumbling around in the Capitol, not knowing what to do. I mean, we saw there were people prepared with gear to do some of the more serious things that we saw on social media they were talking about doing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Jared, what is there anything you think we should talk about that I haven't already mentioned? Because I'm going through my list here, and I'm trying to see. I think we've hit. You know, we've discussed the right wing. QAnon. What have you seen from QAnon since January 6th? Because they, you know, it's interesting to me how basically, you know, how much of the groundwork for January 6th was set by QAnon just existing. Like, the idea...
Yeah, yeah, like Ron Watkins of 8kun, who, you know, at least the HBO documentary alleges, you know, is probably Q or was Q for some period of time. He was one of the, like, leading social media influencers about election disinformation, and in that, I think it was like 20-page or something, basically emergency communication document of like how they were going to flood the zone with bullshit if they overturned the election. His name was on there, despite his connections to QAnon.
Right.
And in the years since January 6th, really, I think the biggest like top line change that I've seen in QAnon has been, you know, with the absence of Q posts and with Trump out of the spotlight, a lot of it has become, a lot of these spaces are like super dependent on the influencers themselves. And there's been several rounds of infighting in these communities, you know, the people who want to be powerful versus the people who want to be rich. But it kind of all gets to the point that, you know, where normally all of these people made their name in the Q movement by sort of translating Q drops to audiences or saying what Trump really said. With the source material gone, it's been more dependent on the influencers to kind of come up with some stuff to say. And thankfully, because in 2020, there was just a whole deluge and explosion of QAnon and all this like new age conspiracy stuff came into the mix. They've just kind of been working from a lot of that material. Alternative medical cure rhetoric has been huge during COVID, just generally anti-government conspiracies around COVID. You know, the media is lying to you. Here's some like space agey stuff, election fraud, quote unquote, election fraud stuff, the audits, like that's all been huge with these personalities. But it's also that also comes with some pretty ugly side effects. Like we've seen in Dallas, one of the personalities, you know, getting their supporters to come out, turn out on Dealey Plaza and await, you know, the return of JFK Jr., which obviously has not happened yet because the guy's been dead for a long time. And I think I saw a Vice report that, you know, they were drinking some sort of, I guess, tonic mixture or something they would call it that had, I'm going to botch it, like high chlorine dioxide, which is basically like bleach-ish. Compound. So, you know, there's some kind of ugly side effects that come with that, but it's really been like the year of the influencer in QAnon.
Right. You know, to me though, like what's interesting about QAnon and January 6th is like the idea of what they were going to do sort of didn't even need to be explained because QAnon existed. Do you know what I mean? Like, they were always, they like since October 2017 when QAnon kicked off on 4chan, there was they were waiting in certain sections of the right, the QAnon believer world, they were waiting for some sort of real world action to happen where Trump would finally say, you know, everything's in motion, let's do this. Where like, you know, like what he was actually saying in the lead up to January 6th, like imagine what it sounded like in their heads, like what he already was saying, like, you know, come down to DC and everything like that. Like in their heads, imagine what was spinning in terms of like, this is it. He's asking us to take part in the storm. This is going to be it. January 6th, this is when it all, everything we've been hearing about, all the Q drops, this is when it all goes into motion. Like that's what I'm thinking about. Like, I would like, I mean, we see just basically how some of these people sort of, I mean, some of the people who've been arrested and have spoken to like FBI about why they were down there, what they were down there, what they thought was going to happen. And it really does seem like there was like an alternative reality they were living in where like Trump was saying stuff that was explicit, but to them it was even like more, it was like almost like a war game, like a whole map with like chips on the battlefield were like laid out for them in their own heads.
Yeah, I mean, if you believe in QAnon hard enough, you basically get to like live inside a video game. And, you know, several people arrested from the Capitol riot were QAnon believers, and QAnon flags and shirts and signs were like all over the Capitol while that was happening. So it's really not a stretch in any sense to think that like what was happening was going to be really exciting to QAnon believers. I think it obviously was to many of them.
Right. So where do you think the Trump world is headed towards now? I mean, I think there's the obvious where, elected Republican officials clearly feel emboldened enough to, like we were talking about, further codify their own voter suppression efforts into their state's laws. But in terms of, I guess, the extremist groups, the far-right influencers, what is next on there? Is it just a big push right now to, because what I've seen is basically there's been a focus on local school boards and such, but that might be more so even just a broader like fringe world, like the anti-vaxxers, which aren't necessarily always part of that. And then maybe they're looking at the midterms. Is it just like a big wait to get to 2024 where they think they're going to reelect Donald Trump? What's next on the docket for these Trump supporters?
I mean, it depends on what part of the far right you're looking at. Like the Steve Bannon-esque zone of the far right is, and that's the one I think is really worth paying attention to right now, that they are, you know, in explicit terms, encouraging the people who follow them, listen to them, and then passing that message along to politicians that Steve Bannon's connected to and think tankers that Steve Bannon's connected to, that the game plan right now should be to go down to the local level, in a Republican Party in your county or your state, or run for an election board at your county or your state or region, whatever. And essentially just kind of install yourself. A lot of those institutions, you know, a lot of the times people run for those positions unopposed. It's technically an election, but like if you, and then you get like 1,000 people really worked up about you getting this office, like you've pretty much got it, right? And the reason they're doing that is because they believe that those mechanisms failed Trump. Like Arizona should have never certified those ballots and sent them in. So like they're trying to take it upon themselves to put people in the electoral system to essentially just junk it up and slam the brakes as hard as they can in any given position if the results start looking a way that they don't like. And that is kind of a tricky thing because on paper, like, they're just participating in the democratic process, exercising their rights to seek these offices just like anybody else. But they're pursuing those offices with explicitly anti-democratic goals. You know, they're seeking the position to kind of like neuter the position, if that makes sense. It's like libertarians who are like, oh, I'm going to run for Senate and what am I going to do? Nothing. Like I should do nothing. And that's what I'm kind of concerned by. You know, the rhetoric of the far right is creeping into the mainstream, and the organizing component of it is going local. And it's not just school boards, it's health boards, city councils, it is healthcare workers, it is, you know, racial justice advocates, educators trying to teach racial history in the country. It is, you know, LGBTQ people hosting events like the Drag Queen Story Hours and stuff. Like those are all becoming targets on these smaller scales. If trends hold, 2022 is not going to would be a year that we still don't see like a big appetite for these big March on Washington style events. I think a lot of it's going to be happening down on the more granular level.
Right. Well, Jared, we just have a few more minutes. Is there anything that I didn't touch upon here that I'm trying to think?
I think we went through a lot of it. Should we pull some questions from the chat before I jump?
Yeah, let's see. Is there any... oh, here we go. Here's a question. Drop your questions now, but here's one from someone who dropped a question before. Dakers11 on YouTube. Matt, great show. Will Trumpers pick DeSantis if Trump gets indicted before 2022? Well, I think you're crossing your fingers.
It's optimistic.
Yeah. whenever anyone says Trump facing some sort of consequence, I always think of the old Bronzehammer tweet where it's like, let's see Donald Trump wriggle his way out of this one. And then it's Donald Trump easily wriggles his way out of that one. And it's like, nevertheless, It's like literally the guy always gets away with it. I mean, not just since he's become a politician and president either. Like the guy has literally gotten away with everything his entire life. All the bad business dealings, all the ways to enrich himself while fucking other people over. He has gotten away with it all because, you know, in this country, once you hit a certain point in terms of money and fame and power, it is almost like you're untouchable.
So if something happens to Trump, if we open up the question like that, will he get indicted? I don't know. I mean,
I think it's more likely that a health issue would happen.
I would love to
see
it, folks. I would love to see it. It would be some just desserts. There's nothing wrong with wanting to see that happen. I'm just kind of skeptical about whether it will. But if something were to happen to Trump, I think DeSantis, from polling as it sits today, would be the shoe in. That would be the next figure.
Right. Ethereal-realizing Shoegaze on YouTube says, will Trump run again? I think he will.
100%. Yeah, 100%. He's already said it.
Right. The only thing that's going to stop him is, like, if something happens, like, health-wise. And even that would have to be, like, something detrimental. Like, the guy would run if he, like, you know, he would totally run if it was something he could just fight through.
I mean, look at Bolsonaro. It's just how these guys work. He went to the hospital for not chewing a shrimp enough. Like, the dude is falling apart, right. And he's like, no, I'm not resigning.
Oh, yeah, he's been in the hospital, like, 20 different times with COVID, I think, on top of the shrimp episode. So, I mean, the dude can just keep going through. DJ Taylor on YouTube says, do you agree that many channels on YouTube are disinformation-sponsored operations who kick boots of authority? I'm not quite sure.
Huh?
I don't really get that one. I should have probably read it in my head before I... are either of you disinformation agents with government handlers? Yes, of course. I'm Joe Biden pays me and Jared directly, by the way. I don't know what your question is here. David Russell asks on YouTube, what is Jared Holt's biggest fear for 2022 and beyond?
My biggest fear is probably bystander effect. That 4+ years of Trump have left us all feeling so tired and like we can't do anything and that this is just the way it is, that people are just going to give up. When really, like, the only way to get out of this is going to be through collaboration and through fucking fighting for it. I don't know a better way to say that. Let's just, like, all of these chuds and motherfuckers are going down into these, like, local areas and just dominating. You know, you watch these videos of psychos at the school board. And where's everybody else? There should be people there telling them, fuck you, you don't represent this community. Like, these ideas, like, nobody thinks like this. You guys are weirdos. And even just doing that would be doing something, right? It's like there are these little things we can do. We just have to engage publicly because there's way more of us than there are of them, at least for now. If we don't do anything, that might change. But for now, there are more of us than there are of them. And if we produce our numbers out into the same arenas, you know, we can at least kind of put the metaphorical Cheeto in the door lock and like keep it in for a little bit.
Right. I mean, it's a good thing though we have the Democrats fighting for.
Yeah, no, I mean that's part of why I say that, man. I don't trust the Democratic Party as far as I can throw it, but it's I would not place all your hopes in that, and I don't think you're going to like vote your way into changing to undoing what is now networked and angry and active social movement. You're going to have to kind of, you know, that's playing football while they're playing baseball.
Right.
And you have to play baseball and win. And we have the numbers and we have the skills and the smart people. We can win. We just have to play.
Right. I mean, nothing shows, I think, how screwed we are, though, than recently when Ted Cruz was out there the other day saying, when Republicans take back the House, which they think they're going to do in 2022 this year in the midterms, when the Republicans take back the House, they're going to immediately impeach Joe Biden. And the response from the administration was, Ted Cruz should be thinking about how he can work with the administration to pass bipartisan legislation and not say such. I mean, they really are like just.
Who
like,
is that for?
Yeah,
that in the Hamilton performance the January 6th thing today. Like, who's asking for this? Who was like, you know what? I want to see at the January 6th memorial the cast of Hamilton performing a pre-recorded hit on Zoom.
Right. You know what? You know what should have been the January 6th remembrance? They could have kept all the candlelight vigils and the Hamilton performance and all that bullshit. They could have kept that to themselves, saved money on that whole thing. They could have, to remember January 6th, they could have actually changed the Senate rules to pass the voting rights legislation, the John Lewis voting rights legislation that's being held up in Congress right now. That would have been the best way to remember the attempt to overturn the election results. That would have been the way to do it. And they could have saved the money on the candles and all the other bullshit.
You know what I think they should have done? They should have hired you and me to talk for an hour and a half in Congress. I think we could probably do it for like 75% of the price of the Hamilton cast. I don't know. As long as we can still do super chats, right?
But right.
Anyway. It's... I mean, all of that stuff is good lip service, but does anybody reasonably believe that, like, if Republicans were in the flip position, they wouldn't change the Senate rules? Because, like, they, like, screwed with the process of judicial nominations just to run in an ungodly amount of court appointments during the Trump era, like, more than any other president, I think, besides, like, George Washington, like, or the first person to do it who actually had to like just sit there and fill courts.
Right. Yeah, it is stunning what we got evil yet smooth running operators on one side and just the biggest dumbasses on the other. And
Simpsons, man. The Simpsons nailed this shit years ago. It was like the RNC convention, and it's like, we're literally evil. And then it's like the DNC convention. It's like, we hate ourselves and can't govern.
Right, right. It's amazing. It's
amazing how that doesn't change.
One thing I totally forgot to mention, and we could end with this because it's I guess on a lighter note, is Donald Trump today, after Joe Biden's January 6th speech, he went on that a little tear on his website. Did you see? He dropped
four different
official statements from Donald Trump today on his website, ranging from literally a one sentence statement that says, due to the inept leadership that gave us open borders, COVID incompetence, loss of energy independence, a military in chaos, rampant inflation, corrupt elections, and lack of world standing, our nation, perhaps for the first time, has lost its confidence. That was number one. And then we literally had like another one a few like an hour later where he went on this longer rant about Biden mentioning his name, which Biden actually didn't mention his name during his speech. And then he put out another statement. If Trump was still on Twitter, he would have been tweeting through this one. Let me tell you.
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt.
He was press statementing his way through this one, though, this time.
He kind of works better in my mind as a blogger, though. Like, he's got huge like blogosphere, like the golden era of blogging, like energy to him.
Right. Well, you remember
posting a link to a YouTube video and just be like, you guys have to see this.
Well, remember his short like little YouTube commentaries he would put out in like early 2010s, where it was like, Rosie O'Donnell's a fat slob. She shouldn't even be. What is she doing on my television? Like the weirdest things. Like the dude would just randomly mention any sort of
We love the Hispanics. I'm eating a Taco Bell from my restaurant.
Like the whole political. I'm talking about like when he would just randomly discuss like some random pop culture thing, like Tom Cruise should have never broken up with Katie Holmes. What was he thinking? Like so weird. Like this. Like he totally was. Like he was like. Trying to be like a Perez Hilton. It's so weird.
No, bring it back. I want to go back to those days. I don't actually want to go back to those days because those created the conditions for these days. But
right. You know, and this is a whole other topic, but it really needs to be. Someone needs to sit down with literally everyone from the center who doesn't see just how harmful even those years Democrats were in power during the Obama administration were to putting the chips into play here. And going all the way back to the Clinton administration, honestly, too. But Jared Holt, thank you so much for joining me. I can't believe when I called you on Skype, it said last chatted with Jared 7 months ago. And I was like, what?
Yeah. It's been a while, man, but it's always good. It's like anytime there's a big, and I tweeted this, like anytime there's a big thing like the RNC or CPAC or whatever, like when it comes to like weird right wing stuff in the national spotlight, we somehow like find our way to each other and end up doing a show.
Right. It was just, it's just meant to be. Whenever something happens in the world, Matt and Jared Holt have to, Matt Binder and Jared Holt have to break it down.
I don't know if we can do one of
these. I'm already messing it up. Oh, there we go. Look at that. Amazing. There we go. Jared Holt, ladies and gentlemen, of first of all, he is a resident fellow at DFR Lab and, of course, the host of the Shitpost podcast. And for your audience, I am Matt Binder, host of Doomed, and I don't know if you know about this, Jared, but I will be coming out with a second show in just about a week or two time, a show all about cryptocurrency.
Should be good. Yes. I know just enough to be dangerous with crypto, but like not as much as I should. So I look forward to listening to that.
Because basically what happened was after I'd have my guest on Doomed and people would call in, there would always be either someone calling in or dropping a chat message about crypto. And then I would go on literally like a 2-hour rant. And I'm like, why am I sitting here every Thursday night for 4 hours talking about crypto after doing a long form interview on the far right? When I could just literally just do an all crypto show and get extra content out of it. So that's what I'm doing.
Oh, well, I'm looking forward to it.
So, Jared, take care. Have a great night and talk to you again soon.
Yeah, talk to you again soon. Thanks for having me on, Matt.
Take care, buddy.
Bye.
Bye. All right, folks, we are going to go to the second half of the show. But first, to support this show, go to patreon.com/Matt Binder. And, I forgot to let Jared plug his stuff. Jared L. Holt on Twitter. All of his links are there. The link to his research on January 6th is in the description of this live stream. Check it out. Now back to my promos. Patreon.com/Matt Binder to support this show. Thank you to the following people who have supported this show over the past week or two since I last did a Thursday show. Let me name drop those people. Cherry2000, Santifa, C, William H, Gary G, Harry M, and G-Dub. Those are the people who became patrons over the past couple of weeks. Patreon.com/Matt Binder. If you could become a Patreon right now, I would be very grateful. Lost a number of patrons. I just lost one right now, actually. Lost a number of patrons in the new year. I guess people's cards and various other things. You know, people, tough times, but if I totally get it. If you can't be a patron, don't worry about it. If you can, though, I would appreciate it. Patreon.com/Matt Binder. Also, I have been remonetized on YouTube finally. After 4 months of being demonetized, I'm finally back to being monetized on YouTube, which means you can drop your super chats once again. That's one good way if you're watching live to give me a one-off donation if you don't want to subscribe to a monthly patron subscription. YouTube.com/Matt Binder. Also, Twitch.tv/Matt Binder. You could drop a subscription on there as well. If you're an Amazon Prime subscriber, Amazon gifts you one free Twitch subscription every month. That means at no extra cost to you, just for the cost of your Amazon Prime subscription, you can basically take an extra couple of bucks out of Jeff Bezos' pocket and gift it to me. Again, no extra cost to you. You just have to go to twitch.tv/MattBinder and subscribe with your Twitch Prime credit. That, again, they give you this one credit every month. It's not renewable. You have to manually resubscribe to me with this Twitch Prime credit every month. But if you do this, again, you're basically taking money out of Jeff Bezos' pocket and handing it to me. No extra cost to you. A great way to support this show. If you can't spare any extra money, but you do have an Amazon Prime subscription, because I totally get it. You know, if you're someone who does all your shopping through Amazon Prime, just because, especially during the pandemic, I know it sucks, but we do what we got to do, and it is convenient. I get it. But this is one way to support this show and say F you to the man. In this case, the man being Jeff Bezos. What else? And doomedcast.com for the podcast version of this show. At Matt Binder on Twitter, Instagram, usually wherever else on social media you can find me, at Matt Binder. The crypto show is on its way. For those of you who don't know, I got COVID. The whole family, the four of us, got COVID last week. So I am about a week or two more so, because the holidays backed up. So I originally wanted the crypto show out this week or next week. Probably going to be in 2 weeks now. Maybe next week, possibly, but definitely in 2 weeks. But then after that, that crypto show will have a regular schedule. I think it, from what I'm seeing, this the crypto show might really, from what I'm seeing, I mean, from everything I'm putting together and everything, the crypto show might be, I hope it takes off. I think it's going to be something special. All right, folks, definitely be on the lookout for that. Let's go to the second half of the show. We can call into the show. I got some clips to call in. Open up your Skype app and search Doomed Live, and I will take your calls. Let's do that right now. If you are watching on the live stream or you are a patron, you can stick around. You don't got to worry about missing the second half of the show. That's right. Even if you're a non-paying person watching the live stream right now, I will let you stick around for free. For everybody else, this is where I say goodbye for now. Happy New Year. I will see you online shortly on another stream. And I will definitely see you all next time on Doomed.